Today, property fools us again. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, where I'm the latest post covering finance and property news. Well, this past week marks an important turning point in the raging bull of the Australian property market. So perhaps it's time to rethink fair value, despite the fact a recent poll from a November 13th to 26th survey of 15 property analysts showed they think national home prices will rise around 8% this year and 6.9% in 2026, up from 5% and 5.6% in the previous poll. That's the largest upgrade this year. Home prices in Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Brisbane and Perth, they say, will rise between 5 and 7% next year. And Catalyst's Daily Dwelling Index for the 30th of November, that measures the value changes across the five major Australian capital cities, shows that over November, dwelling values increased by 1% at the five city aggregate level, though there are wide divergences between the individual capital city markets. Melbourne, up 0.3%, Sydney, 0.5%, recorded relatively soft growth, whereas Brisbane at 1.7%, Perth at 2.4%, and Adelaide at 1.9% recorded more explosive growth. Actually, in Australia, the median value of a home is now nearly 8 times annual income, and about 2/3 of homeowners own property, although more have a mortgage that's larger than ever, as I see in my surveys. On Wednesday, record inflation data suggested Australia's economy was rapidly approaching its speed limits, and on Thursday, the nation's banking regulator launched a preemptive strike aimed at ensuring the rapidly overheating housing market cannot do the same. And while scores of home sellers are putting their properties under the hammer before the end of the year, with the busiest auction week recorded in over 18 months, buyer confidence is now low, reflected in the national clearance rates sitting below 70% for a second week in a row. And there are many lemons on the market as people try to get shot of inferior property at peak prices before things change. As I discussed in my earlier show, after weeks of speculation, the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority said that it will apply macro-prudential limits on higher risk lending from February. Banks will be required to keep lending to borrowers who have debt of 6 times their income or more to 20% of new loans across their own occupier and investor loan books. Now, it's interesting to note how surgical APRA has been with these DTI limits, which are being used for the first time. While head of APRA, John Lonsdale, emphasised that APRA's focus is on the safety and stability of the financial system, it's notable it has carved out loans for new builds so as not to lean on housing supply. And given where higher risk DTI lending is sitting right now, Lonsdale concedes that the new restrictions will have a greater impact on property investors than first-time buyers, which is an easier sell from a political perspective. Actually, around 10% of loans to investors are currently above 6 times debt to income, a figure that is growing. While one wag commented this is like APRA imposing a 200-kilometer speed limit on the market, one so far out of range as to be meaningless, and I indeed called APRA a wet lettuce because of their track record of weak regulation with a bias towards serving the banks rather than protecting households from reckless lending, the chickens are now indeed coming home to roost. Actually, for at least a decade, the rising indebtedness of Australian households has been a chief concern for APRA and other members of the Council of Financial Regulators, which includes the Reserve Bank, the Australian Securities Investment Commission, and the Treasury. Thus, they mumble on about financial stability risks, viewing the market from a top-down averaging perspective rather than looking at the financial hotspots and the impacts on some real people. Nevertheless, APRA's inaugural system risk outlook said last week that the fact that the gross debt of Australian households sits at 1.8 times their incomes and has done for almost a decade bakes a real vulnerability into the financial system. As they said, highly leveraged households are more likely to encounter difficulties servicing their loans when economic conditions deteriorate. These households may need to cut back on their spending or even sell their properties to meet their loan obligations, dynamics that can make downturns more severe and undermine the resilience of banks. So again, they're looking at it from the banker's point of view, but they are calling out potential structural risks in the system. This despite the pressure from the major banks to reduce the mortgage serviceability buffer that requires banks to stress test borrowers with a rate of 3% above the standard variable mortgage, as they argue current rates mean the buffer is now less relevant, despite average mortgage rates over the long-term cycle sitting around, well, 7%. Now, this is self-serving, of course, by the banks, with lending growth from the Australian Bureau of Statistics released earlier this month showing that new lending rose 9.6% in the December quarter, with new loans to investors up 17.6% in the quarter and 18.7% for the year. Indeed, the share of loans by investors is now at 40.55%, in the range where APRA tightened the rules back in 2017 before loosening them again in 2019. The recent surge in investor lending has been accompanied by a rise in riskier lending practices, including the so-called finfluencers on social media, spruiking the use of family trusts to turbocharge their use of debt. While this corner of the market is relatively small, it's telling institutions like Macquarie and Commonwealth Bank were moved to very publicly shut the door on these types of borrowers, but other smaller lenders are still going gangbusters. Such investors are competing with first home buyers for older detached houses as they offer the highest capital gain perspective. That demand was contributing to the price of homes at the low end of the market, allowing faster growth in the top end. Actually, improving loan affordability and a strong labour market has catalysed a surge in demand from first home buyers who have been able to use government subsidies such as the First Home Buyer Deposit Scheme, and also property investors who appear to have rushed into the market to try and get ahead of the rise in prices that deposit schemes will likely deliver. APRA Chairman John Lonsdale said strong housing credit growth on its own is not the key issue for the regulator, but rather higher risk borrowing where households and investors are stretching themselves too far. We've seen an increase in loans at high debt to income, particularly to investors, Lonsdale said. Investor activity can amplify housing lending and price upswings that can impact financial stability. Baron Jarry's banking analyst Jonathan Mott says it's prudent that APRA has moved to proactively manage the build-up of risk in the Australian housing market, especially as Australian households are near the most overleveraged in the world. But he also wonders if the bank is now fighting yesterday's problem. Baron Jarry's house view is that Wednesday's inflation number will force the Reserve Bank to hike rates by 25 basis points in both May and August. While that is the more hawkish view among local economists, Mott says that if those rate hikes come to pass, then the average reduction in borrowing capacity for an investor will be 4% and 6% for an owner-occupier, and that would limit the average borrower's capacity to well above 6 times DTI. HSBC's local chief economist Paul Bloxham agrees that interest rates and not APRA's new rules are likely to be the biggest constraint on both banks and their borrowers. Rates will take the heat out of the housing market, he says. While the ASX 200 bank index has fallen about 8% since early November, Mott says that the sector remains far from cheap. Despite the pullback over the last week, the banks remain at 20.4 times earnings and 2.4 times book value. As a result, it's hard to be bullish on the banks, given the immediate outlook. The banks have taken the market's mantle of expensive defensive stocks, which may keep valuations stretched if the global equity rally continues. However, if there are any signs of economic weakness or a market correction, we could see a sharp retraction in Australian bank multiples. And as for the property market in the run-up to the summer holidays, well, the preliminary occurrence rate for the combined capital cities dropped another percentage point last week to 68.2%, That's well now under the decade average of 68.6% and well below the spring average of 72.1%. That's according to real estate data house Cotality. Domain's data also confirms the trajectory. This was the second week in a row where the preliminary clearance rate has come in under the 70% mark, continuing a trend towards softer auction outcomes that have been evident since the start of spring. Now, across Sydney, 1,263 homes went under the hammer last week, surging 10.8% on the previous week's volume, and that's the largest number of auctions recorded since the week before Easter. But 65.2% of properties reported sold, which is the lowest early clearance rate for the city since the week ending June the 8th. Melbourne held 1,682 auctions last week. That's a rise of 24.1% on the previous week's volume and the second largest number of auctions since last week of October. But 68.6% of residences achieved a sale, falling 1.2 percentage points from the week before. And across the smaller capital cities, Brisbane recorded the most auctions, with 214 residences going under the hammer and a preliminary clearance rate of 71.5%, up 3.1 percentage points on the previous week. Adelaide's auction volume jumped nearly a third from the week before, with 189 homes going under the hammer. That's a 29.5% jump and a 85.2% early clearance rate, which is the highest of any capital city. Canberra recorded 113 homes going to the auctions and a 65.4% preliminary clearance rate, while 23 residents went under the hammer in Perth at just 54.5% selling. So all of this suggests we could see a pivot in property. And this comes with a warning, especially for those caught up in an auction chase. In residential property auctions in Australia, where first price auctions are prevalent, there are some wrinkles. There are vendor bids. That's typically a reserve price that's hidden from the bidders, hence the phase the property is now on the market. And there's the prospect of negotiation among the vendors and the top couple of bidders if the reserve price isn't met. All of this makes for a very complicated strategic setting to make a bid. So as the number of other bidders increases, you should perhaps bid more aggressively, but also less aggressively. That is pretty tricky, really. And in some auctions, you might even know whom you're bidding against or the number of bidders. And value, of course, is complicated because rational bidding is hard. Just think about what it requires. A rational bidder has to figure out the difference between the expected value of the house based on the information available before the fact and the expected value condition on winning the auction. But external factors like the path of interest rates and finance availability do play into this calculus. And with the next RBA rate move more likely now up, higher inflation and tighter regulation, things are about to get very interesting. So as always, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultants standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. My thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.